Hello, podcast fans. Adam Carolla here. I'm leading the fight against patent trolls who are threatening this medium. It's not about me. It's about the podcast you're listening to right now. If I go down, this show could be next. So visit fundanything.com/patent troll for more information on how you can keep podcasting alive. Thank you and mahalo.
His skin is white just like a ghost. Thick Irish roots and his blonde hair. And he sounds like a Chicago super fan. A music nerd with a collection of CDs from here to there. Yes, Andy Dare is in Chicago, interviewing and barbecuing. It's the Andy Dare Show. It's the Andy Dare Show.
Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for checking out the Andy Dare Show. This is my episode 115. I'm joined by a local guy, drummer of Material Issue and the Ladies and Gentlemen, Mike Zelenko. Totally cool guy. Now he's into a whole bunch of custom cabinetry, carpentry, all good stuff. And we had discussed the parallels between the two, drumming and carpentry. And he is a cool dude. And yeah, Material Issue, can't say enough about the band. They had three amazing albums in the early 90s. And they're from Chicago. They had a great power pop sound, but they still had a lot of muscle underneath them. Just a cool power trio. The guys made a lot of noise in Chicagoland during the late 80s, so it was really no surprise when they landed a major label deal and signed to Mercury. And their 1991 album is called International Pop Overthrow. It is a classic. It is near 5 stars for me. And in 2011, the drummer and the bassist got back together with another singer. And yeah, they did a couple tribute shows, and they had a deluxe issue of the album with a whole bunch of bonus tracks and B-sides. Check that out if you can. But yeah, so then they had two more albums. Then they got dropped by Mercury. Jim took it personally and obviously had a lot of issues in his life and had romantic issues and ended his own life in 1996. And it's a sad story. Such a talent, such a songwriter, such a powerhouse band that obviously couldn't go forward without Jim, without the singer. So, yeah, it's a sad ending to a cool story. But, yeah, Andy Dare Show is here for anybody that has had suicidal thoughts or depression. I've dealt with demons myself. And just want you to know that there's always somebody out there to talk to. And if you're interested in reaching out to somebody, you can check out suicidepreventionlifeline.org. And it's a cool site. There's a lot of options you can go to, a lot of people you can talk to. You're not alone. You'll get through this. And yes, the Material Issue music stands up, stands the test of time. You know, almost 20 years after Jim's passing, the music, you can definitely hear an influence in a lot of modern rock. You can definitely hear the influence with the way that they rock their shows and the power trio style. So Material Issue, do check them out. I just want to thank Mike for doing the interview. I want to thank you guys for standing with us for the past 3.5 years. And if you want to support my little creative endeavor, all you got to do is go to theandydareshow.com. You check out the right side of the page. It's an Amazon banner. Takes you right to Amazon. You spend zero extra dollars, zero extra cents, but you tip your cap to the Andy Dare Show and all the cool programming we have at theandydareshow.com. And yeah, we're bringing you a lot of cool interviews, a lot of cool shows on a weekly basis. So yeah, the least you could do is just click through the Amazon banner. If you want to do a little more, you can go to patreon.com/andydare and become a member of the Andy Dare Show for $1 a month. And yeah, you'll get billed on the first of every month. And it just really means a lot to us, everybody that has, you know, given a little time or money to the Andy Dare Show. I would also, yeah, definitely like to thank Empty Lighthouse, a cool new cultural website out at emptylighthouse.com. I've been writing and contributing articles and a lot of cool reviews, a lot of cool features. I've been doing a couple articles a week now. And, yeah, I've been having a blast doing it. This week I just did my Damon Albarn his new album called Everyday Robots. I reviewed that on Empty Lighthouse. And check it out at EmptyLighthouse.com. Did I love it? Did I hate it? Was I lukewarm? I'm a huge Damon Albarn fan, so do check out the review. And I want to thank Empty Lighthouse for also featuring fellow Darer Network podcaster Tyler Kale. And yeah, he's been having fun as well doing all sorts of his stuff with doppelgangers and Instagram power rankings. So do check it out, EmptyLighthouse.com. That about does it for my little spiel this week. I just want to thank Mother Nature for finally letting spring break here in Chicago. You know, summer is finally around the corner. It's looking gorgeous out there, and just love the sun, love seeing all the trees turning green. So I'm a happy guy. I hope you are too. And just want to thank Mike Zelenko for taking the time out. Here is my episode 115 with special guest Mike Zelenko. Hey everybody, thank you so much for checking out the Andy Darer Show. This is episode 115, and I'm joined by a local rocker, Mike Zelenko, ex-Material Issue. How you doing, man?
Hello. Hello out there.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yeah.
All right. Yes, we were just saying, yeah, Material Issue has been a huge influence on my life. I mean, now it's been almost 18 years now, but it seems like your influence is still really strong in the area, not even just Chicagoland and music in general. How are things for you in 2014? I see you're doing some custom cabinet work and stuff like that, another creative outlet, right?
Yeah, I build custom furniture for my customers, and mostly my designs. And I also do custom cabinets, furniture, design work. And I was kind of in that world a bit when I was playing music full-time, and sort of parlayed that into my current career. So, yeah, I've been doing that for quite a while now.
Nice. Is that something that you were, like, formally trained on, or is it just something that you picked up out of, like, necessity for building something small and then slowly you work your way up, or how'd that start?
Pretty similar to how I started off in music. You know, it was just mostly an interest and a passion, and just basically diving in and doing it. And I think, you know, like music, I just had sort of an aptitude for it, and taught myself, and had other people show me things along the way.
Yeah, it seems like there's a lot of parallels between both worlds. Like, you start off drumming, probably have a small little kit you buy at Sears or something like that. Then you start playing more shows, you get more, you buy the splash cymbal, you buy the other drums. Slowly but surely, you turn into Neil Peart. And cabinet building, you needed to buy, you know, you need to make something small for your girlfriend, and then you want to buy that tool, now you want to buy this tool, that tool, and then slowly but surely you got your own little little shop going, right?
That's pretty much how it happened. I mean, for me, it kind of started out buying my first house and building things that I couldn't find in stores. You know, sort of things in special sort of corners where you can only really custom build them. And that's how I kind of got started doing it. And then sort of after a while, I figured out I was pretty good at it. So
nice. Sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Like, how about, taking it back for my listeners, how about like your first influence as a drummer?
Oh, drumming influence. Well, you know, I have to say, like, when I started getting into music, like, probably around 8 or 9 years old, you know, sometime in the mid-70s, I was more fascinated by music than ever wanted to be a player. I wanted to be a guitar player when I started, sort of like, you know, getting the idea that I could, you know, or to learn an instrument, but it just didn't come very naturally for me, and switched over to drums at about 12 years old. And I think I would have to say some of the first I guess drummers that I listened to were, you know, like AC/DC and Ringo Starr and Charlie Watts, some of the more simple stuff, you know.
Sure. Yeah. Cool. Like
I'm just very, you know, like, I'm always been very into sort of simple music and simple playing, and I think that Jim and Ted from True Issues shared that together.
Shared that same vibe. I gotcha. Was high school? Did you take music in high school, or was that something that it was just more of a hobby and just kind of something that you wanted to do on your free time?
Well, I would say it's funny because in high school, you know, I went to a high school in Chicago in the city that had some that produced some sort of fairly semi-famous people.
Nice.
There was one guy in particular, Michael Connell. He was in a band called Rights of the Accused, which were like a sort of 80s punk band.
Sure, yeah.
You know, he was one of my first friends in high school, and I would you know, hang out with him and hang out with his friends, and they were in this really, really healthy punk rock music scene in the sort of the early 80s, you know, 81, 82, 83. And I'd go see, you know, his shows with his band, and, you know, and they weren't particularly mind-blowingly great. But, you know, he was a high school age kid, same age as me, and he was making records, you know. And he was getting, you know, written about in these fanzines, you know. And I'm still friends with Mike, and he probably gets annoyed at how many times I credit him for introducing me to you know, this world of music that didn't wait around for, you know, big record companies to come and find you or vice versa. They just kind of did it themselves. So
that's awesome.
Very,
yeah. Like the Rights of the Accused, yeah. They come up in my last interview I did with Jason Narduzzi, Verboten and all that. He started when he was 10 years old, and it's they didn't wait around for MTV approval. They didn't wait around for major labels. They were already, you know, doing pretty well for themselves in high school. And that's kind of a cool thing that, I mean, I guess nowadays it could happen by building a fan base via social media and stuff like that. It's kind of come full circle because now we don't need MTV anymore. We don't need major labels anymore. So it has kind of come full circle. But that's awesome that you kind of fit in a little bit with that scene, like the Naked Ray Gun, Rights of the Accused, all that good stuff.
Well, yeah, that was the stuff that I grew up on the Northwest Side in Chicago, which is a very blue collar neighborhood. In the late 70s and early 80s, when I started kind of getting into my teenage years, in my neighborhood, you know, being very sort of blue collar, it was very sort of hard rock, heavy metal. There wasn't a lot of the sort of, it was a very limited kind of, limited kind of thing, you know, there. So, you know, getting, you know, in high school with Mike, he introduced me to a lot of new stuff and really kind of helped, you know, open up ideas for myself. Just getting back to you asking me about starting to play, it pretty much early on, kind of planted the seeds in my head that this is something that I kind of want to do with my life. And even though I'm not very good at it right now, I know that I can get very good at it. I knew very, very early on that it was something I wanted to do. Yeah.
That's real cool. And studying up on the scene via my show, it's I remember in the 90s, people were taking a look at the 80s and saying, oh, the 80s sucked. It was all just, you know, mall pop and hair metal and all that stuff. But now looking back, you had all these separate scenes in different cities. You had Sub Pop Records up in Seattle. You had SST Records out on the West Coast. You had our stuff with Touch and Go Records here in Chicago and like the scene we were just talking about. So it's kind of a cool thing that is kind of now finally getting some light and some, you know, some respect. And I mean, I'm sure it has all the way back then, but just now it seems like it's all clicking in my head. And like you guys definitely had the punk muscle, you know, obviously via your drumming and like, you know, the hard riffs and stuff, but you guys had a definite respect for pop melodies. And I guess that's mostly on Jim's side, right? Was he a big fan of, you know, like the Raspberries, you know, Beach Boys, Beatles?
We all were. I wouldn't like, you know, take responsibility solely in Mature Issue for adding the hard edge to it. It wasn't so much that, like, you know, going back to talking about these punk rock bands and these small labels, it wasn't so much that we wanted to play that kind of music. It was kind of like, wow, well, you know, you can just do this. You can just do it. I was very into like melodic. I've always been into melodic music, and Jim. When I first met Jim, and we talked about. I met Jim in 86, like right after I graduated high school, and Jim was like 4 years older than me. So you know, I was pretty young when I met Jim. I was like 18 or something like that, And right away we started talking about like, well, you know, we don't need to you know, get a big record deal right away. You know, we can just look at all these small labels, look at all these great scenes down in Athens, Georgia, you know, and in North Carolina, up in Minneapolis, you know, with Twin Tone Records, you know, the Replacements and REM and these bands, but back in the '80s, the Replacements were not really a big band back. They weren't that big of a band, you know, like back in 86. I mean, yeah, they had just signed to Sire Records, but like, I remember seeing the Replacements in 1984 at the Cubby Bear in Chicago. And, you know, there were 30 people there, you know, and they were out working and they weren't making any money, but they were like, they were calling themselves professional musicians. And so that was our plan from day one. And when we came up with the formula of Mature Issue, we were like, well, we're going to be a very melodic band and we're going to have harmonies, but we're going to be very stripped down and simple. And we're going to add all of our influences from like, you know, AC/DC to the Bee Gees. And we're going to wear it on our sleeves. So that was the whole sort of master plan of Mature Issue.
That's incredible. How about like, would he work up demos by himself and then bring some like full-fledged songs to you guys? Or was it more of creating together, or did he come to rehearsal with stuff already kind of tracked out?
No, we never had demos, you know, work out. Usually, the way that Jim would bring ideas to the band, there would be some songs that he would have completely sort of worked out. He would have the verse, the chorus, all the lyrics, and he would just sort of play the song to us in a very Beatlesque kind of format, where there would be, you know, a verse, a chorus, a verse, a chorus, a bridge, a verse, a chorus, an outro, you know, all within, you know, 2 minutes and 50 seconds or whatever. And then some of the tunes were just like, oh great, let's not change anything, we'll just play along. And then some tunes he had like certain ideas, and then we kind of said, well, why don't we take this thing from there? And so, you know, yeah, that was collaboration, you know. I mean, not so much in the writing aspect, in the arrangements and so yeah, it wasn't, you know, it was very organic kind of environment.
Nice.
You know, as far as putting the songs together and arranging things.
That's pretty sweet. How about like a favorite venue to play around Chicagoland?
Around Chicago?
Yeah.
Oh God. Well, I think my favorite venue, especially with Mature Issue, would probably be the Metro, because you know, like I remember back in high school, like seeing the Ramones at Metro,
nice.
Like in 84, 85, and you know, it was sold out, of course, but not that big of a place. I mean, you know, it's only like, you know, what is it, like 800 people?
Eight hundred to a thousand, I think.
You know, and you know, I mean, you know, like old geezers like us reminisce about the '80s and bands like the Ramones, who are now like legendary. Ramones were together today, they'd probably be playing in front of 10,000 people, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
But like, you know, for us, like that kind of, you gotta remember, like, in that era of music, like in the mid 80s, the kind of music that we liked, like the Ramones and Naked Reagan and the Smiths and Echo and the Bunnymen and Psychedelic Furs, those were bands that for the most part didn't get played on the radio. You know, they were the radio back then was sort of dominated by, you know, 80s sort of new wave, you know, Cyndi Lauper and like
Michael Jackson
and stuff like that. And then on the other aspect, there was all this hair metal stuff like Poison and, you know, whatever band you want to throw out there with that genre. So like, you know, we were kind of like, well, we don't want to do that and we don't want to do this. It was before it was called alternative rock, you know, officially a title on it, but it was like, well, this is like, you know, so when I saw Ramones at Metro, I was like, well, this is, you know, I remember the first time Material Issue headlined Metro, we thought we had like had arrived, you know, like, you know, we're playing like the coolest venue in Chicago. And we filled the place. When we filled Metro on our own, we were like, man, if we could do this in every city, we could make enough money to not have to, like, you know, have a day job. And we probably, you know, you're thinking from an aspect of a person in their late 20s and early, late teens and early 20s. So, like, what, you know, this would be great if we could play a venue the size of Metro, you know, all over the United States.
It's
so,
huge.
Yeah, I'd have said Metro. Metro was always a very exciting place for me.
Yeah, it seems like they've built up a huge amount of good vibes towards them. And Joe Shanahan, the owner, is sick right now. And I just keep reading on Facebook all these, you know, all these testimonials about how he, like, you know, helped their band, how he started their band getting, you know, getting some airplay, stuff like that.
He helped us immensely, yeah.
Yeah. And like the Smashing Pumpkins, REM, all this stuff, they all got a big break from Joe in the Metro. So it seems like that is the place to play in Chicago still in 2014. So,
yeah.
How about this?
Yeah, like, I mean, there are some other great venues like Lincoln Hall, and the people over at Schubert's are doing great things around the city, the Hideout.
And you guys like the Gallery Cabaret, right?
Gallery Cabaret. Oh, you have to refresh my memory on that one.
It said something. I took a Chicago bus tour that they visited all like the special places in Chicago. And they're dropping your name with Liz Phair and the Pumpkins to the Gallery Cabaret up in Bucktown, it said. I'd never been, but I was just wondering. It mentioned you on their website. So.
Oh, I don't remember that place. I doubt it's there anymore. I mean, there were several venues back in the late 80s that are not around anymore, as you would imagine, 25 years on.
Yeah, same thing with the first place.
I don't remember that place.
You do remember it? Huh?
Oh, maybe you're talking about Knicks.
I think it's
not Knicks. Dreamers.
Club Dreamers.
Yeah, I think you're talking about Dreamers. Yeah.
Gotcha. Nice. Right.
Dreamers,
up on
which is now called Knicks. It's in Wicker Park. Yeah. When Wicker Park was a mean, nasty, a really sort of bad neighborhood.
Yeah.
Now it's
the opposite.
Now it's like, you know. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. It's kind of funny.
Getting coffee and stuff like that. How about this? Did grunge help or hurt you guys?
You know, I'd have to say it hurt us, you know, just because the way that the industry is and just the way the entertainment industry is in general, when a band like Nirvana or a movie like Pulp Fiction or something, I'm thinking I'm totally in the 90s right now, but Nirvana, who were, and Pearl Jam, say, and Soundgarden, to a lesser extent, but Nirvana really was the band that that sort of broke open this idea to the big industry record company Fat Cats that, like, wow, you know, this band can be as big as the Beatles. You know, this is not just some, like, sideline boutique band that we have on our label that we hope they sell like, you know, 100,000 units. and it makes us look really cool because, no, I mean, Nirvana, that record was enormously huge. And what usually follows suit with things like that when trends and you know, sort of mania type things like that happen is, you know, we got our record deal. We put out our first record, like, I think 8 months before Nevermind came out, our first record. And, you know, 8 months doesn't seem like a very long time, but, like, as far as like, you know, industry people were concerned, we were like, you know,
old news.
Not really, because we were a new band still. We're only 8 months into the game, but it was just kind of like they were kind of going like, well, whoa, you know. And I remember, like, labels were signing every single knockoff band that sounded something remotely like Nirvana or grunge or Seattle. And it was just kind of like, hey, what about all these great songs we have over here, guys? Yeah. You know, we were aligned with the Matthew Sweets and the Posies, Teenage Fan Club and Jellyfish.
Sure. Sloan. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it was, so I think in some ways it did, you know, because for a very pivotal point of our career our label and our fan base at the time were very excited about our move to a major label record and to a wider audience. It got the grunge thing just kind of took over. I mean, you had like, I could tell you like a short story. Like, sure. I remember, like, you know, like in 90, you know, end of 91, early 92, you know, we're on the road and Ted, the bass player, Mature Issue, and I, we were sort of roommates, you know, when we were on the road. And, that was way back in the day when MTV played music videos, like around the clock. And, you know, we would sort of like, you know, after the gig the night before, so get up and whatever day, you know, we'd like have MTV on and so we watch this video. It's like, oh, well, here's this fucking band again, you know, this, you know, I'm still alive, you know, this guy's kind of singing, like kind of mumbling, and like, I'm like, well, what the fuck is with the flannel shirts and the lumberjack look, you know? And we're like, what is this, you know? Like, what are these guys, you know? Like, the Nirvana thing we got, because, like, you know, they're like, oh, they're like good songs, you know? I mean, they're like poppy kind of good songs. We get, I mean, what we're doing is not that far away from what they're doing.
Sure.
But, like, it was, you know, and of course, I'm referring to Pearl Jam, and, you know, like their very, very first single before they became huge. And, like, Ted just kind of looked at me, and he's just like, well, you know, we're doing, like, this sort of, like, mod thing, you know?
Yeah,
like, you know, and, like, yeah, and he just said, like, oh, my God, we're fucked. Like, you know, this is where, and that's pretty much what happened. So that's a very long answer to your question. About
no, I love it. It's awesome. And, yeah, so you had the album after that, and then the third album you guys got dropped. And then it all kind of went into a little bit of a, obviously, a downhill or downward spiral. And obviously Jim had his own issues, and there's not much we can really say about that. How was it like picking up the pieces after, you know, Jim passed?
Oh, well, that was really hard. Jim was my friend, you know, and I wouldn't have cared if the band, you know.
You would probably
I'd rather have
you
the
just
band.
Broke
I'd
up,
have,
yeah.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'd rather have our band broken up and dead than my friend, you know, so it was very hard. Yeah. I mean, it's still something all these years later it's something you never really quite get over, you know?
Certainly. Yeah. So, it's just something that time won't ever really solve, but I mean, at least you got to just keep moving forward, and you found another outlet.
Yeah.
And everybody is still cool in the Chicago scene. How about like, what's, are you still like jamming with anybody? Are you still playing music, or what's the deal with as far as your musical aspiration?
Well, I mean, I'm still in my, I mean, the Ladies and Gentlemen, which has been a band I've been in since, I don't know, about 2004 now, maybe about 10 years. We've been together about 10 years. Skid Marks, who was a band called The Waymoves and Charming Beggars, and Lenny, who was bandmates with Jason Narducci. He was in Verbo.
Oh, okay.
On bass. And Scott Ramos here, who's plays keyboards, called The Ladies and Gentlemen. And I'm still doing that. We don't do a lot of stuff. I mean, we probably only do about 3 or 4 gigs a year. And
I'll have to come out and see you guys sometime. Yeah, cool.
Yeah. And then Ted and I did the reunion shows. What was that? 3 years ago now.
For the 20th anniversary, right?
Yeah, 20th anniversary release of International Pop Overthrow. Universal owns the rights to our stuff now. Put out a 20th anniversary really cool CD. It come on vinyl too.
Yeah, some awesome outtakes and cool hidden nuggets that I had never heard on that thing. So do check it out if you haven't heard that one before. If you just heard the IPO album, check out the deluxe too. Cool. All right, yeah. Any other things you'd like to plug or anything else?
No, not really. There may be some more shows with Ted and I in the material issue context. We have Phil Angotti, who's a great local singer-songwriter, who I've also been his drummer for a few years. I haven't done much with him in the past year or year and a half, but Phil Angotti is really great, and he really was very gracious and very generous to step up and take on Jim's part with the reunion shows.
Awesome.
There's been some offers for us to play, some pretty generous offers for us to play, and we may do some more shows. So
awesome. I'm looking forward to it. If you do, keep us all notified. How about the Ladies and Gentlemen? Do you guys have a website?
I'm sure we do. I don't know what it is though. No, I don't
right.
know. Yeah, I think we have Facebook. I think we have Facebook.
All right, cool. Yeah, just Google it by now. The Ladies and Gentlemen Music Chicago. I'm sure it'll come up. And yeah, just want to thank you so much for taking the time out. This was a real cool chat. I love the whole Chicago punk scene, alt scene from 80s and 90s. So couldn't thank you more for taking the time out.
It's my pleasure. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, man. This episode of the Andy Dare Show is brought to you in part by Uncle Bub's award-winning barbecue in Westmont, Illinois. Family-owned and operated since 1997, Uncle Bub's is the real deal barbecue. A family-friendly restaurant open 7 days a week. Also, it's a full-service catering company doing weddings, pig roasts, luau's, grill packages, you name it. They have a friendly, helpful staff that will make sure that your party goes off without a hitch. Call them at 630-493-9000. Visit them at 132 South Cass Avenue in Westmount, Illinois, and UncleBubs.com.
Hey man, I know you like grilling. I know you like getting those dark grill marks on your burgers, fish, chicken. And I know you don't want to just dry your meat out like you're cooking with a hairdryer. Why not get the Man Grate and click through the AndyDareShow.com's banner so we can keep the lights on here at Honeycomb Hideout Studios in gorgeous Westmont, Illinois. The Man Grate.
This episode of the Andy Dare Show is brought to you in part by Record Utopia, a music lover's dream with thousands of vinyl records, musical instruments, and sound gear. They buy, sell, and trade. Give them a call at 630-963-1957. Visit them in Westmont, Illinois at 309 West Ogden Avenue, on the web at recordutopia.com. It's always a good, relaxed atmosphere. Check them out, Record Utopia. Be sure to follow Andy on Twitter, that's at Andy Dare, and like our show on Facebook, that's facebook.com/TheAndyDareShow. Videos at youtube.com/AndrewMartinDare, and we're on iTunes, just search The Andy Dare Show, please leave a review. Thanks so much to our wonderful sponsors, Uncle Bub's award-winning barbecue, Record Utopia, The Man Grate, and Amazon.com. Theme song courtesy of Rich Banks Music. Thank you so much for checking out The Andy Dare Show. TheAndyDareShow.com.